the MadTech podcast special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech.
Hello, and welcome to this ExchangeWire MadTech podcast special. Today, we're taking on a topic that's had more than its fair share of column inches and online outrage so far this year, the rise of generative AI. Generative AI's profile was turbocharged by the arrival in late 2022 of OpenAI's ChatGPT. Social media timelines were flooded by screenshots of the chatbot's responses to requests for Christmas songs about ad tech or think pieces about the possibilities of this new AI author. Since then, ChatGPT has been joined by Microsoft's Bing and Google's Bard as the race to implement generative AI heats up. To tackle some of these questions around generative AI, I'm joined by Nick Pringle, SVP Executive Creative Director at RGA. Nick, thanks so much for joining me today. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for having me on.
Good. You're very welcome. I'm glad to be talking to a sentient person about this. Cool. I will crack on with the first question. It's a fairly big one. Nick, how do you think generative AI is going to challenge traditional notions of creativity and originality? Are we looking at the future here?
So it is a huge question to start up with. And I think if I break it down into two parts, there's a point around what is creativity and what is originality today. And I think for creativity, you know, if we beg the question, what is a creative person? And I think I think a creative person is someone who has an individual point of view and then finds ways of expressing that. And, you know, since the dawn of time, we've found interesting ways and we found tools as a way to express our individual point of view, whether it be, you know, drawing charcoal paintings on the side of caves or the many technologies that happened over millennia. And we've always had tools there to help us. So I think, you know, we don't question the notion of creativity. It is a person's point of view, and it is the tools that they can use in order to express it. So generative AI is another tool. It's a new tool. I guess it's different to the other tools we've had before. It's much more disruptive. But I don't think it questions creativity in general. You still need a person to be creative. There's never just going to be a tool that I think on its own is creative. Originality. What is original is a really good question. As I've got older, increasingly thinking that nothing is original. When I was younger, looking at Michael Jackson and the way he danced and thinking, God, he's a true original. And the industry kind of portrayed this man as a kind of a completely unique one-off. And then you sort of find out later in life that he had, you know, taken his style from Bob Fosse, who had taken his style from someone else. And yeah, everything is a remix, essentially. Yeah. And I think we're sort of obsessed with originality in this industry. But often what you see or what's passed up as original is really a remix of something else. And so, you know, generative AI becomes a tool that allows us to remix in a different way. So that's, you know, that's exciting. But I don't think it questions creativity or originality to its core. Do I think it's the future? Yeah, I think increasingly we will use this as part of the way that we work and part of the way we express ourselves and part of the way that we, you know, put original thinking, such as it is, out into the world.
Yeah, there's like a lot, you know, it was a huge question and there's quite a lot to unpick in it in terms of that side of the creative side and whether, like you said, you know, it's an interesting point that everything is a remix. You know, how do we define that originality in any aspect? Do you feel that generative AI is going to be able to produce the kind of unexpected creative stuff that our industry thrives on? And what are the limitations of that?
Yeah, well, I think, the first thing is, I guess, you know, generative AI only works with a person operating the generative AI. So it's not, you know, as you said at the top, what is or isn't sentient. It isn't sentient. It isn't thinking new thoughts. You know, it's a predictive tool, an incredibly advanced predictive tool that's using insane data sets in order to kind of predict most likely outcomes. So I don't think, you know, we're getting to a place where, you know, we sort of fear for our jobs and, you know, unique creative thought from a human gets replaced by that of a machine. I think it's a huge accelerant to the creativity we can get to, but not a replacement of it. Because fundamentally, someone's got to sit there and put in the keywords. If we're talking about text to image, you have to kind of have those interesting juxtapositions, those interesting ideas to give the AI then to give you something as a result of those inputs. So you can't remove person and tool, in this state. So I said, yeah, so not a replacement of, but kind of a supporter of, I guess, creative thinkers as they stand today.
Yeah, I think, you know, that ties into something in the intro, and it was a lot of the stuff that we saw coming out on social media and people experimenting. You know, it came from the prompts, basically. It came from the inputs that you put into ChatGPT, and, you know, stuff, you know, write me a hip hop song in the style of Shakespeare, or, you know, whatever people were putting in to get these funny responses from. So, yeah, I think you're totally right in terms of how it is as a tool and how it can aid the industry, I suppose, in that.
Yeah, and I think we've seen, because it's very hypey right now and everyone's hugely excited about it, and I think rightly so, because the technology is kind of remarkable. But a lot of things that we're seeing, particularly from an image point of view, are things that could have been created before. You know, generative AI, the brilliant things have been done in Cinema 4D for forever, 3D, you know, incredible imagery, like in Photoshop, we can create incredible things. I think there's sometimes a mistake in thinking that generative AI has come along and suddenly we can create incredible images. Well, no, we've been able to create incredible images for a very, very long time. What it does do is, I guess, lower the bar of the ability for people to create really interesting looking things. But that's not the machine thinking up those things. I think it's just really important. It's still the kind of the creativity of the person using the tools. And often some of the things that we're seeing out in all our kind of social feeds have come from, you know, a generative AI tool, Midjourney, DALL-E, whatever it might be, plus going into another tool, plus taken into Photoshop, plus taken to a high-end retoucher, to kind of get to the output. And so you see this kind of beautiful polished piece and think, the machine is thinking, how incredible the machine made this. But really, if you backtrack the story, there are people there at the heart, helping imagine what that output might be in the first place. It's just that the AI, I guess, is allowing you to realize it possibly at greater speed. But you're not getting necessarily, those tools themselves aren't outputting production ready assets. I think that's the other thing to kind of be aware of. They require a lot more than just what you get from any of us kind of playing around in the various kind of platforms. So it's a piece of the equation, I guess, rather than the solve to kind of all creativity.
Yeah, I think that ties in quite nicely, actually, with the next issue I wanted to talk about, which is its relevance and its use for the advertising industry in particular, and the creative that advertising produces. I come from a journalistic and copywriting background, and you see some of these things, and people are terrified that copywriters will be replaced instantly. Everyone will be removed, and marketing will be done purely through ChatGPT. But I sit on the same side as you in terms of it is an interesting tool to aid production, but ultimately not a replacement. I just wondered how you felt about that and how you can see that integrating with your work and what you produce.
Yeah, I think we come very much from a similar point of view. If you guys trade in original thought and disruptive thinking, whether it be words or pictures, then I think you're safe, if you like. And these tools can be really supportive, and as I said, like an accelerant. I think if you trade in sort of uninspiring copy or images that kind of fill the internet, just fill the channels of the internet in order to kind of serve up SEO and all that kind of stuff and advertising, then I think a bunch of that can probably be replaced and done more quickly by ChatGPT or the other programs. But the point is that copy is not coming from a unique point of view. It is just kind of filling space. And my sort of interesting thought on this is that as we move from a content-based world where we're just filling channels all the time in order to kind of have optimized content that can work well in a search engine, as search engines move into AI-driven search engines, perhaps because there's less of a need generally for kind of just this flooding of channels in order to fulfill a search-based model. So I just wonder if those two things are kind of connected over time, that there's less need for uninteresting copy and images in the internet. as we get to a better form of search. I'd just be interested to see how that evolves over the, you know, the next kind of 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, I think that's going to be fascinating. We've talked about the implications for the creative itself and what, you know, it might mean for designers or copywriters, but what it might mean for the platforms themselves that we put content out on and how we and what we focus on is another really interesting area, like what it's going to mean for search that we optimize for so frequently. Can you see a shift in that area as well?
I think so. And maybe the shift goes back to higher quality content becomes more important rather than content for content's sakes, which I think we'd all be delighted if that's the way things things ultimately go. But I don't have enough of a glass ball to be able to kind of see where that will end. But it's a nice thought, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, in the utopian version of this sci-fi disaster that we seem to be sleepwalking into, that would be the great output, is that, you know, we end up in a very high quality content world through it.
I think there's one thought on, because if you are producing high quality content, whether it's visuals or words, what is true, and I don't think will change, is that we have less and less time to do it.
Yeah.
Just because of the connected modern world that we find ourselves in. And when you have less and less time, some of these AI tools can be very helpful, I think, in order to compress your process. You know, because often you're thinking about, if I think about my own kind of creative process, it tends to start off with sort of a brain dump of trying to get ideas down. What do we think? You know, move past the bad ones, evolve some of them into better ones. Hopefully, eventually get to something really interesting. And AI can do some of that lifting for you. If you like, it can provide a bunch of the bad ideas. which you can then springboard off, or a team can springboard off, because it's based on, you know, the familiar or predictions or themes. And if you're trying to get something disruptive and different, then, you know, be able to rapidly move past the familiar or the obvious is actually a pretty good role for generative AI.
Oh yeah, as an initial filter, like you say, for the bad ideas, to get ChatGPT to tell you the awful stuff before you get the creatives to hit on the really good.
Yeah,
it's actually it's an interesting point and a really an efficient way of using it as well, I think.
Yeah, I think sort of looking at I sort of think around sort of strategy and using ChatGPT in order to kind of do some of the foundational work on strategy. Because if you're looking for themes or tropes that exist, it's very good at identifying those. And then if you ask ChatGPT to sort of flip the dial on those, or flip the way of looking on those tropes and going, well, what isn't it? You suddenly actually start to kind of get to some interesting start points. It's kind of using the tool in your favor and understanding what it does deliver, and then sort of flipping the lens on that, I think, is a really interesting way of looking at some of the tools.
Yeah, if you're researching into an aspect of the industry, or you're looking for some inspiration from copy, it seems you can rely on them to spit the cliches at you first, so you can then set your copywriters. It. Yeah, you can set your copywriters on the right path, avoiding existing cliches.
Yeah, where shouldn't we go? And again, that point about speed, that it's hard to be expert in so many different genres or industries. You know, it's like, oh, today we're in automotive, tomorrow we're in technology, the next day we're thinking about healthcare. And no one brain, I think, can understand the tropes or the patterns of all of those in order to know how to disrupt them. So there's a great role, actually, for these technologies to do that work for you, knowing that you have to be the creative director of it. You know, it's not the answer, it's merely the kind of a way for you to examine the problem, but get to, I guess, provocations or challenges, which you then need to build on.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we've seen through some of the early hiccups of the generative AI era, which namely Google Bard, which wiped a massive portion of its parent company's value off it overnight.
Yeah.
Simply regurgitating misinformation that it was obviously, you know, feeding on and learning from. So in that sense, you know, we can spit out anything we like about it replacing human creativity, but ultimately there's like the quality control, and that I think the idea of it as a tool is the most, you know, it's probably the most prescient one we have, is that it will spit out what's put into it And there will always be a need for someone to discern what's good and what's come out of it.
I mean, you can see some future disasters, can't you, where you know, you sort of put these tools in charge without the filter of a person and let them do, and let them just run. From an advertising, from a kind of content or copy point of view, because things go wrong. They say strange things. You know, you don't want to be putting that straight out into the world without some kind of, you know, filter on it.
No, and
human filter.
A human quality control layer. And we've seen, and funnily enough, we've seen, you know, the reverse is true as well in journalists who are, you know, trying very hard to circumvent its boundaries and make it say, you know, stuff. I love the New York Times story about Sydney, I love you, leave your wife for me, and this, you know, this aggressive chatbot that had somehow gone off the rails. But yeah, totally reliant again on what the person asks it to do and is asking of it. So I find that fascinating, where we are in, first of all, the hype cycle, and then also like the controversy cycle as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of, I suppose, what, you know, Google Bard did and the, I suppose, ethical and kind of copyright issues around the originality of what it produces. How do you see that in terms of how we're going to incorporate it into the industry? What do we need to be wary of?
I guess we're in early days, aren't we, of challenging existing legal frameworks around what is copyright and where can you source imagery from, and at what point does that imagery cease to be reflective of the source and become something new? I mean, I know there are sort of legal cases in America with artists who are claiming copyright infringement. And then there's a, I think one of the US courts is saying that, I think it's Midjourney or one of the platforms actually isn't copyright infringement. So I guess there's going to be some precedents ahead set of which don't exist right now. I know we're being cautious in the way that we use it. If we're, you know, mostly we're using it for our own internal processes to accelerate our thinking, and not thinking about it as a tool that you can then become, creates assets for a brand that they can then, you know, own and push out into market. And I think that's probably the right approach, but I'm sure there are going to be some pretty interesting cases over the next 2 years, which will question, coming back to your first question around originality, ownership, and ultimately copyright infringement, because, you know, if your image is 1/1,000,000,000th of the master image, is it still your image or not? But then likewise, if you're someone with a huge portfolio of work, let's say Picasso, and we're creating images in the style of Picasso based on the tool being trained on a huge volume of Picasso artworks, then where do we stand at that point? And we're seeing, I think, you know, some of the really interesting work that's been coming out, and we've seen it on social and LinkedIn, is people experimenting with brand partnerships, impossible brand partnerships. You'll have seen British Airways and Burberry. There's been Adidas, various Adidas, well, there's a whole bunch out there. You can kind of search them and find them out. But, you know, provocatively putting those out into the world as potential partnerships, which of course are clearly infringing copyright. Yeah. but then you're in the wild west of the internet, and I guess some brands will want to quash that and see it as overreaching, and others will let it flow and think actually that it's perhaps, you know, doing some good for them if the combination is right.
Of course. It's there is going to be that side as well, that some people will like that. It's, you know, it's out there. It's an interesting kind of way of, I suppose it's publicity anyway, but no, it'd be interesting to see the actual brand responses to that.
It opens a really interesting question that's sort of beyond, you know, this issue of generative AI or just AI generally, which is the ownership of brands. You know, are we moving into an era where people have a greater ownership of the brands they like and their ability to influence them, change them, contort them, re-represent them? I think at a macro level, we are slowly moving to this place where we don't just kind of consume brands, we are contributing to them and to how they appear and how they behave. You know, so this is another, for me, just like another interesting indicator, the ease of which an individual can express a brand in their own image rather than just how the brand chooses to express themselves. And do you as a brand try and control that, or do you let it go? You know, I think there's just a really interesting big question around what is brand management as you move into this world where it's so much easier for people to have their own point of view on how the brand shows up.
Yeah, and that, you know, that links really, really nicely back to something you mentioned earlier. Like, is this the future of remix culture? And, you know, from Michael Jackson dancing to, you know, someone who loves a pair of Air Max Ones and has used generative AI design to make themselves a new pair and remix what they're doing and you know, using ChatGPT for brand slogans. Like, I think. Yeah. The whole Web3 question about ownership in brands and people's involvement and the user generated side of things is fascinating as well.
Yeah, it does. And it connects into that. And, you know, you look at what Nike are doing with, you know, Swoosh, their kind of Web3 offering, allowing people to kind of design and impact the way that the brand is represented in, you know, both product or just in kind of the, you know, in visuals out there in the world. It's perhaps, you know, an interesting precursor to where perhaps more brands need to shift over time. But there's no doubt that remix, the ease of the tools that allow you to remix, even beyond generative AI, are being rapidly, you know, adopted by kids or used by kids, you know, from very, very young ages. They can create beautiful content, interesting content, strange, contorted, messed up, remixed content at a fidelity and a speed that we've never known before. So, yeah, the question is, to what extent do you try and contain that, restrict it, or do you choose to enable it? Because, you know, over time, those 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 15-year-olds, they're going to become the big spenders and they are adopting or establishing new kind of rules and principles for how brands operate in their lives.
Yeah, and, you know, that generation, it's not going to be long before you are opening the doors of RGA to your creative team and they're going to be walking through the door armed with these skills that they've been developing for near on a decade.
That's right. So it never ceases to surprise me, as I think possibly the oldest person in our office here in London, the fluidity with which some of the younger people come in and their ability to create and use these tools in ways that I kind of never could have imagined when I started in the industry.
Yeah, and it's, you know, in that sense, it's exciting for the workplace of the future, I think.
It is.
For that side of things, will you be, you know, hiring any ChatGPT prompt engineers soon to be inputting the asks to the AI?
That's a good question. Does that job exist? I think what we're encouraging is everyone to become their own engineer and their own experimenter, and to try challenge how we get things done and how we express the ideas that we have.
Well, that's all we have time for, Nick. That was a really great discussion. I think main takeaway that is, you know, it's a tool and it's there, and maybe handle with care and some expertise and caution. But it's there's a lot it can do. A real pleasure to talk to you on it. Thank you so much, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Good to chat.
Anytime. Thank you, and thank you all very much for listening. Take care.